Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Helping you get to the back end of the work week. Welcome to the Hump Show on After Hours.
Hope that this cute little ditty helps you feel better about hump day. You're heading into it. We're actually in the midst of ours. Wednesday becomes so much easier when you start with our show and all of our goofiness. We're going to get you over the hump.
Getting you to the good half of your week. It's the Hump Show on After Hours.
Hump.
That's it. In fact, we are slowly, very slowly, heading downhill now toward another football weekend. And this time, it's not just college, it's also the NFL. Past the midway point of the work week, and that's what the Hump Show is all about. For producer Pete, it's about getting us past that middle point of the work week. And so we call it the Hump Show. It's our Hump Show. It's your Hump Day. After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. And we are training producer Pete. He just had his first edition of Ask Amy Anything. He thinks he knows how it goes now. We're going to pick up the pace next week, which will be fun. But he's going to handle all the questions. And so we'll get back into that rhythm. For those of you who are responding to my plea and you have joined us on Survivor Island, awesome. Apparently the link is still working, so I'll figure out what's going on with the listener who can't get in. But yeah, there is still room on this latest island. You've got a couple of days left. If you're going to pick a Sunday game, you're golden. Don't worry about picking before Thursday or Friday. But I wouldn't wait till the last second, because if you do, you procrastinate. You're like me. Oh yeah, you can forget. It'll sneak up on you. So go to either of our social media sites at A-Law Radio or our Facebook page. And through the course of the day on Wednesday, I will answer some of your other questions for Ask Amy. Didn't have a chance to get to them all, but it's always good to hear from you. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Looking at some of the results from the baseball diamond, want to work in those, but I think one of my favorites is Shohei Ohtani returning to the factory of sadness that is Anaheim. Now, without Mike Trout, without Ohtani, they're way below 500 at home, and the Dodgers just piled on Tuesday night. Not only did they give Ohtani a standing ovation when he first went out for BP, so he was getting all kinds of cheers from the crowd, but then he treated them to an RBI triple for the Dodgers, of course, in the third inning. And this is my favorite part. Ron Washington decides to intentionally walk Shohei Ohtani in extra innings to get to Mookie Betts, who promptly hits a three-run home run, and that was ball game in the 10th. It's good stuff. I mean, first time in a long time that anyone has gone around Shohei Ohtani. You pick your poison, to be sure. It didn't work out for the Angels, although not a whole lot works out for the Angels.
Mookie swings, hits a drive, deep left field. This ball's back.
This ball's going, a home run. Mookie Betts with a Mookie moment in Anaheim. A three-run shot. And the Dodgers have opened it up in the 10th.
Now, does that sound like a pro-Angels crowd? It does not. It sounds like a lot of Dodgers fans there at Angel Stadium. So, adding to their misery, the Angels are this time not even pretending to be a playoff contender for any point in the 24 season. Mike Trout's been gone for months, and I know he's frustrated, but it's become a familiar refrain for the Angels. And now Shohei Ohtani plays and succeeds and is about to make more history for the crosstown team, who just went into his old stadium and was a major part of why the Dodgers pick up another win. That's a call there on Dodgers radio. Dave Roberts, he'll take it. And actually, forget that it's the Angels. Just the fact that they are playing their best baseball of the season and that they're coming around, rounding into form after getting pushed by the other teams in the NL West, it's got to feel good.
I thought we hung in there. I thought Detmers was really good tonight. And Miggy Rowe just keeps getting big hits. And so even that hit in the ninth, in the 10th inning was a big hit that sort of, you know, opened up the floodgates.
Yeah, speaking of Mickey Rowe, I like how they call him. It was Rojas, actually, who had the first RBI single that broke the tie in the 10th. And then fireworks ensued. And Mookie Betts had the three-run homer that you heard. Just to update, there were no stolen bases for Shohei. Betts had one, but there wasn't one for Shohei, nor did he have a home run, just a triple. Wah, wah, wah. And so he's still sitting on 44 and 46. Now, if you're keeping track, the New York Yankees superstar Aaron Judge has not had a home run now in more than a week, and the Yankees are struggling with the Texas Rangers.
Bases full, bottom of the ninth, one out, 4-3 Yankees. And the pitch. Swing and a deep shot into left field. Verdugo watching it go into the stands for a home run. Walk-off grand slam, Wyatt Langford. The Rangers get to Holmes. Langford, the hero. He hits a walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth, and the Rangers come back to win it 7-4. And the Yankees collapse here in the bottom of the ninth in Texas.
The World Series champions still have some fight in them. That's Justin Shackle on Yankees radio. So I guess we don't have the Rangers call, which is unfortunate because they have a terrific broadcast team. But good for the Rangers. Now, they're still below 500, unlikely to make the playoffs. But the Yankees taking a bit of a hit in their trip deep into the heart of Texas. So that's a tough one. They also lost back-to-back games to the Cardinals before that. And so the Yankees have given up the lead in the American League East, though they are at 80 wins, but the Orioles have 81 because they have the benefit of tangling, I'm using that term loosely, tangling with the Baltimore or with the Chicago White Sox this week. So, you know, that's a little bit of an easier task. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I love, too, as I mentioned, that the Dodgers, when they felt the heat from behind them, they responded and are playing some of the best baseball of the year. They have won 18 of their last 24. Well, remember when the Royals briefly took over the lead in the American League Central? Well, the Cleveland Guardians, they've got some fight and also some bite.
Here comes the 2-2. Swung on, lined, right center field. Base hit for Kwan. That's going to score two. Brennan's across. Right behind him is Thomas. The throw comes to third. Not in time to retire Rocchio. And into second with a two-run double is Stephen Kwan.
Another no contest for the Guardians against the Royals. This one taking place in Kansas City, but five runs between the seventh and the eighth innings. And right now, they look like they have reestablished themselves, not just as the team to beat in the Central, but one of the top teams in the American League. And Tanner Bibby, he gets his 11th win. Just love the way that it's different guys for them every night.
I don't need to punch out 15 for us to win a game. For me to come around this time and just try to, like I said, execute a single pitch every single time and just try to do it over and over and over and not get bored with it.
Not get bored with it. I didn't know that was possible. I guess, though, baseball can be relatively slow, even with the new rules from Rob Manfred. And if you're a pitcher and you're only out there every fifth day, all right. He goes six innings, allows just the one run on a couple of hits, and he punches out six, not 15. Meanwhile, the Royals, they're in a really tough stretch. But, yeah, this has got to be frustrating because they had worked so hard to get into that position and even overtake the Guardians briefly. But Brady Singer knows they got to figure it out.
We're going to go through these things. We're a really, really good ball club. We've had a hell of a year. And just enjoying watching these guys play every night. And like I said, I'm going to come back tomorrow and compete.
Oh, there's so much time to go. It's after hours with Amy Lawrence. I sometimes feel like it's early still to be scoreboard watching, but I am. There's the conversation that's going on about who should be the National League MVP. We could throw out candidates. Seems pretty clear that right now Shohei Ohtani is the front runner. However, Francisco Lindor is maybe top three, part of that conversation. The Mets, I don't know if they were supposed to be in a rebuild mode. I know they didn't spend nearly as much money in the offseason as what fans were hoping. Didn't make a lot of moves. Instead, maybe licking their wounds after the moves of 23 went so horribly wrong. And they started out in just the worst funk. And then even fans having to lower their expectations from what they already were, which was essentially bottom of the barrel, basement dweller in the National League East. Well, it's not that way at all. They have had an incredible middle section of the season. At one point, they were the hottest team in baseball. And now you've got Lindor, who's reaching 30 home runs and is powering this team where they continue to make themselves part of that wild card conversation.
2-1. Lindor sends a high fly to right. O'Neill going back to the track at the wall. It's gone. Two-run home run, Francisco Lindor. A high arcing shot landing atop the Payson Cadillac Club. His 30th home run of the year.
It feels good. I haven't really thought what he really means. All I know is today we won the game and he helped to get the offense going. So I was pleased with that, happy with that. And we got to continue to climb the mountain.
Continue to climb the mountain. That's what September is all about. I kind of feel like I did my sports talk duty here in playing the hits, but hitting all the highlights and incorporating a bunch of fan bases. Okay, but I'm still going to get people who say to me, why didn't you talk about my team? It happens all the time. It is the challenge of a national radio host that is impossible to get to everything and every fan base and every single team and storyline. If I did, this would be a really awful show. It would just be about boom, 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 boom. I'd never stop talking and I would never be able to spend any time on anything of significance more than, say, for 10 seconds. That's what they do on TV. On radio, we play the hits is what it's called. It's a little bit like a music station or a music network and their philosophy. You play the hits. And during the NFL season, again, really impossible to get to everything, but we do our best.
And for our sake, in dessert terms, it's the icing off the cupcake.
Is that all you eat on the cupcake?
I eat the cupcake. I eat the full cupcake. But for a lot of people, like my son, he eats the icing.
That's
off
it.
The cupcake.
All right. So he would be more about playing the hits.
Right.
Just the icing.
I like to peel layers.
I love to break my cupcake in half. And so that way, as I'm eating each half, first of all, if you ever tried eating a cupcake whole, sometimes it's an awkward shape for your mouth. So I cut it in half. Sometimes I eat it with a fork. But yeah, I do one half. So I get icing and cake. And then the other half, icing and cake. I like the combo.
I've not tried it that way. I might try it next time that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, make sure you get to it before your son does.
Well, that's the first problem. That doesn't happen, so I won't be trying it that way.
Maybe after he goes to bed.
Yes.
Although now, after he goes to bed, you come to work.
Right, I wake up.
Yeah, you guys are trying a new schedule. It'll get easier. It's definitely a challenge. And I don't know how you will navigate it, but on the weekends, I'm assuming that you will be right side up. So I call it upside down, but then weekends right side up. Because I'm not going to sleep all day Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It's not possible with what we do, especially during football season. But I can't miss my entire Saturday by sleeping. Mm-hmm. And so instead, every Friday night, I go to bed on the same schedule with the Hubs. So I'm awake all day Saturday, all day Sunday, only to turn around and flip the schedule again on Monday. So it's challenging. I will tell you, there are at least 2 days each week where I don't sleep well because I'm flipping the schedule back.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that's going to go this weekend. I have a couple of ways I'm going to try to do it.
Ooh.
But
You're gonna do a taste test?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like the cupcakes?
I'm sure they're gonna go wrong, but you know, that's how we try.
Don't say it like that. It very well could be perfect.
That's true.
But are you gonna attempt to do the daytime awake or the nighttime awake first?
I think on Friday, I'm gonna go to bed early for a little bit,
okay,
and then go to bed regular time Friday night.
All right. So get a nap.
Yes.
That's kind of what I do on Fridays, too. I try not to sleep as long. Now, this Friday is completely different because I am not sleeping at all. So once we get off the air, and it's a challenge because it's the first weekend of the NFL season, but once we get off the air on Friday morning, I'm going straight to the airport. We've got one more family wedding in Texas. My husband's already going to be there. So I'm flying on Friday morning to Dallas. We've got family dinner on Friday late afternoon, so it's a 5 o'clock family dinner. I don't know. I suck at sleeping on planes. I don't know if I'm going to be able to stay awake all day Friday, but that's essentially what we're supposed to be doing as family members is, you know, getting mom to the Airbnb, getting changed, getting to the dinner. I told my husband I might make it to 7 o'clock Central Time on Friday night, but as soon as the dinner is done, I'm going to bed. You guys can do whatever you want, but if that's the case, I will have been up 30 plus hours and traveled at the same time. Now, here's the kicker. Weddings on Saturday. We've got stuff all day long. But I think I'll be able to manage since I'm sleeping Friday night. But then Sunday, so it was a late night wedding reception. Supposed to be done around 11. Maybe grab 3 hours of sleep. And then we have to go to the airport, flying back on Sunday morning, believing there will be no delays, getting back to Newark, which is where I fly into, around 11 o'clock in the morning, hopping in the car, getting the dog, and then going home, starting the football season. And then from that point, of course, we'll be up 16 hours until, oof. Yeah, so it's going to be 2 out of 3 days awake more than 24 hours.
I did once 30 hours from when I did the show, did the mornings.
Once, he says. He's done it once.
Once. I did the mornings. I woke up at 3 a.m. and then I was up till the next day. That would be 10 a.m. Eastern time. So it was pretty much 24 hours.
So this is fairly routine for me when I travel. And we've traveled a lot in the last 2 years. And so, yeah, I would say at least once a month, I'm up 30 hours in a row. I do not recommend it. It is tough. And especially on an NFL Sunday, our first one together, which is the first one of the season, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm kind of anxious about it. But coffee is the key, and adrenaline. Coffee and adrenaline will get us through. 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio. A lot of you reacting to what I just said on Twix. I told you what you win if you are the sole survivor for our Survivor Pool this year, Survivor Island. If you haven't joined yet, you better make sure you check it out because it's an award/reward. It's to the victor go the spoils, something I've never offered before. So you might want to get on board. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, our hump show. Good morning to you here on the Infinity Sports Network.
Here on After Hours, we like you as much as you like us.
Oh, mama, don't play now, baby.
Hi, Amy. First time caller on the show. I think you're doing great since I've been listening to you tonight.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'll get my introduction out the way as fast as possible. Pleased to meet you, Amy. I'm actually new. It's my first time phoning in.
Sweet.
So I am new among your listeners. I'm a newbie to After Hours.
Sweet. Welcome.
Awesome.
Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I've listened to a lot of sports talk radio over the years and never made a call. You've done such an excellent job tonight.
First time calling. Amy, thank you for taking my call. I listen to your show every morning. I've been traveling to Boston.
Thank you.
Good morning, Amy, American Woman.
mom, and I love listening to you. I left Atlanta last night. I'm all the way in Tuscaloosa. Amy, it is so wonderful every time that I listen. I will call you next week. Love you all. Have a great morning.
Can't wait.
Trying to do what I was doing.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Good morning to you. It's a Wednesday. The NFL kicks off tomorrow. Isn't that cool? It's your hump day. You just got to get through this one, and the NFL will greet you, as will college football. But come on, the NFL is the big bad bully about to take over the center ring of the circus. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, a lot of you are still sending advice for producer Pete as he goes through his first week on the show. I've been sharing those with him. Also, if you didn't hear your questions for Ask Amy Anything, I'll be responding to a bunch of those as we go through the week. The link to the podcast is also up. We've migrated to a new site. And so the old link, while it still does have the old podcast, it's now a dead link, meaning it's not updating. So there's a brand new one, so you can check that out on both of our sites. And if you're looking for the entry, the invite to Survivor Island and the victory cookies that await you, we're going to check that out yourself as well. The link is also available, 855-212-4227. Had a chance to catch up with Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS. Really need to be able to pick his brain. And we talked about a variety of topics, starting with the San Francisco 49ers. But he's got Bengals and Patriots this weekend on CBS. So I wanted to ask him a little bit about the game that he's getting ready for, including the lack of a Ja'Marr Chase, a wide receiver one for the Bengals. So I asked him, what's the impact of not having Chase on the field?
We don't know yet. Because all of this is, Zach Taylor, the head coach, is dead. Remember, he went to the podium and proudly announced that, hey, Ja'Marr's going to practice. And the very next day, he came out 13 minutes late in street clothes like, no. and he went, you know, I think we'll just call him, you know, we'll just have to deal with it day to day. And that's where we are. Now, the one thing Zach Taylor has said consistently is, he's up on all the playbook. He's in all the meetings. He's not saying it, but we're getting all these accounts. He's doing his own workout, and Zach believes he's in excellent shape. So it feels like, hey, if he decides to play on Sunday, he'll play, and we expect him to be pretty darn good. My thing is, will he play? We don't know that. And if he does, okay, terrific. This is how the Bengals look. But if he doesn't, here's the one thing the Bengals have in their advantage. T. Higgins. T. was drafted, and remember, Tyler Boyd was the top receiver for the Bengals. He'd gone back-to-back years of 1,000 yards. He was their guy. They draft T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd became wide receiver two immediately. T. Higgins, 1,000 yards, 1,000 yards. They draft Ja'Marr Chase. Everyone bumps back one more spot.
Hey, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boyd goes to number 3. Higgins goes to 2. And here he is at 1. Now, remember, Higgins had a contract thing. He was one of 8 receivers that were fighting over contracts? He's the only one who didn't get an extension. He finally signed his franchise tag. He said, I just want to be done with it. I don't want to deal with it anymore. But you know deep inside, Amy, if he ends up being the top guy on Sunday, he's going to want to put on a show to show the world, hey, remember, at the end of this year, I'm available for the taking. And yes, I am a wide receiver one. So that would play in the Bengals' favor if indeed Chase doesn't play, because I think T. Higgins would be, how would we say it? Ultra motivated.
What do you want to see from the rookie quarterbacks who will be out there this first week of their NFL careers?
I want them to have the opportunity to play well. And when I say well, it doesn't have to be spectacular. I want to have solid openers. You know, I want them to get through that just fine. Now, a couple of them are probably going to have spectacular openers. It just kind of happens that way, right? People forget Cam Newton's first 2 games in the NFL. He threw for over 400 yards in both games. That was off of a strike year, so he didn't even have OTAs in minicamp. His first time with the team was in fall camp. and he went 400-400. Andy Dalton that year took his team to the playoffs with the Bengals. I think he went 11-5. So you will see some of that, you know. But solid starts, them getting their feet wet, team playing well. I think it's just fun to watch these youngsters come into the league and then to see how they develop, because all of them are not going to be great. The odds are against it. Which ones are, is it going to be out of the six quarterbacks that got drafted? We know three are going to start on opening day.
Right.
A fourth game close in Drake May. How soon before he plays? And then we'll see what happens with the other guys, right? But right now, that's where we are. I think we're all just excited to see it unfold.
I definitely am. You mentioned Drake. You've got the Patriots-Bengals this weekend. And as you point out, there was a debate about whether or not they should throw the rookie into the fire. The offensive line with the Patriots is a work in progress, shall we say. What are the factors that you consider before you throw a rookie QB out behind a line that isn't as cohesive as maybe it needs to be?
Yeah, I think that if you have an option, and the Patriots feel like they do, that's one way you go. But I've heard my former CBS colleague Phil Sims talk about, well, you know, if he's your guy, he's got to learn to operate behind everything anyway. You know, listen, Phil played a position and, you know, should have been a Super Bowl MVP, for God's sakes. What was he, 22 or 26 against Denver? Phenomenal. He gets it and understands that part too. And he's like, hey, if this quarterback is tough enough, he should be able to go through the fire. Everyone just looks at it differently. I think the Patriots with Jacoby Brissett, they're hoping that his ability to see things coming at him and maybe get the line into the right blocking assignment can cut down on some of that, that maybe Drake May can't do that quickly at this time. Because sometimes, you know, every time we see a quarterback get hit, we're thinking the offensive line failed. Sometimes the quarterback didn't put you in the right protection. And so right now I think New England wants to make sure they have someone who's kind of seen it all, and maybe he can help that offensive line come along.
Who or what poses the greatest threat to the Chiefs from the AFC in 2024?
Do they have enough in them that says we're going to do the same fight, climb the mountaintop, dig in and grid their way through it again as they have before? I've got nothing that I've seen that says that they don't. Because, you know, last year, Amy, they could have very well kind of folded 10 as well. Speaking of Christmas, how bad was Christmas Day versus Kent versus the Raiders? Right there, I think a lot of us were looking at that game, and I think we all at least wondered if maybe this just isn't Kansas City's year. That's the way it felt. When that game was over, there'd been a lot of battles. Maybe this is it. And then they found a way to turn it around, and Mahomes played well, but the defense led them. I'm not saying they reinvent themselves. They don't. But they find a way to have the motivation. And I think their motivation is much more somehow Andy Reid and the crew, their mindset is chasing, not defending. Because I think the teams that try to defend titles, I think they have a tougher time. If your mindset is more chasing another one, I think it's a different way of playing. Because defending, you play not to lose, right? You play not to give up something.
Uh-huh.
But when you're chasing, you go after something. And I think that Kansas City's mindset and the way they go about their business, somehow they figured out the formula that you're still chasing. Even if we keep saying, well, they're the two-time defending champs going for a third, they focus on the going for a third. And I think that's why Kansas City is able to stay in the fight.
I think that there will be a ton of people who jump on the Lions bandwagon should get off to a strong start, especially after being so close to getting to a Super Bowl, and then the draft with 750,000 people that were there over the course of a few days. I can imagine that scene was insane. What do the Lions have to do to build on their 12-5 season from a year ago?
Just being the same team that they've been in terms of whatever, you know, the overused word of culture, knowing who they are and playing to that. The Lions, when they did Hard Knocks, Amy, I'm firmly convinced that they became a lot of people's second favorite team. Like, whoever you supported, coming off of their Hard Knocks appearance, you loved the Lions. So you loved how Dan Campbell did things. You loved what the Lions were doing. I think a lot of people kind of root for them if they're not playing their favorite team. They're not America's team because we all know who that is because of, you know, tradition. But at the same time, a lot of people root for them and want to see them do well. And I think they're able to ride that wave a little bit as well. I think that helps them. But they're tough. They're gritty. They're determined. And they realize that they let one get away last year because they had San Francisco. You know, they absolutely did. They changed their style. They didn't finish it off. They know that's on them. Now here's their opportunity to correct that. And I think they're going to be just fine.
Can't possibly ask you questions about every team or every storyline. So before I let you go, Charles, what's another storyline or team that you're really excited to see off the bat?
Buffalo. I can't wait because I think the expectations remain the same. I'm not sure we would say that the roster, we would grade it going into season as good as it may have been in previous years. Milano getting hurt again, it really hurts them. Got questions about the secondary. Got a first-time D coordinator, Bobby Babich, who's going to call the defenses. Offense has lost firepower with Diggs. Who's going to be their lead runner? I mean, we could go on all day, right? But Josh Allen is there. And Josh Allen has not been able to get through Patrick Mahomes to get where he wants to go, but has been able to watch Patrick Mahomes take what we would call a lesser roster of offensive players and find ways to win. I think Buffalo's counting on Josh Allen to ascend to that and be that guy, and he is quite capable. So I'm excited to see what Buffalo does this year. If you're Miami, if you are, let's see who else in that division, the Jets?
Jets.
If you're not thinking to yourselves, if not now, when, and taking on Buffalo, there's something wrong with you. They've got to feel like Buffalo's vulnerable. This is our chance to go get them. But I don't think it's going to be easy. I really don't. I think that big horse wearing 17 is going to take his play to a different level this year. And we're going to look at him and go, yeah, he can put people on his back and carry them. But now old enough with the maturity about taking over that entire locker room and saying, all right, guys, we're going to find a way to make this all work. They tell us we don't have X, Y, and Z. Fine, we'll do it a different way. And he will be the central point of that.
Great stuff with Charles Davis. As a side note, his play-by-play partners, his broadcast partners, have included Gus Johnson, Kevin Burkhart, who now is Tom Brady, and now currently Ian Eagle with the NFL and CBS. So really good stuff with him. We talked also about the Niners and having their ducks in a row, so to speak, as well as the Ricky Pearsall situation. We also talked about playing in Brazil and what we're hearing from some athletes about how they don't want to go, they don't want their families to go, or they just plan to stay in the hotel. Was reading a bunch about the different travel plans for the Eagles versus the Packers and where they're staying and how they're going to navigate it. And so we talked about that too. Did talk about working with Ian and his advice for Tom, as well as some of the other major stories in the NFL week one. So advice, my advice, catch it on podcast because Charles is worth the time. 855-212-4227. That's our number always at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. Happy hump day. It's Wednesday. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Emmanuel Rodriguez.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, a deep dive into baseball, and we'll start with a magical Mookie moment in Anaheim.
There's the pitch from Contreras. Mookie swings, hits a drive, deep left field. This ball's back. This ball's gone. A home run. Mookie Betts with a Mookie moment in Anaheim. A three-run shot. And the Dodgers have opened it up in the 10th.
Dodgers Radio Network. The Dodgers, they score four runs in the 10th inning to pull away from the Angels late, 6-2. Now to Oracle, where the Giants had the winning run on first base.
2-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out, and the ball game is over. The Diamondbacks hang on by the skin of their scales, but they do win it by a final score of 8-7.
D-backs Radio Network, Justin Martinez's 92-mile-per-hour splitter fools Gerar Encarnacion to stop the comeback attempt. D-backs 8, Giants 7. More finals, Orioles shut the White Sox out 9-0, 109 losses for Chicago. Wyatt Langford's walk-off grand slam gets the Rangers past the Yankees 7-4. With that, Baltimore now leads the AL East. Mets beat the Red Sox 7-2. Francisco Lindor joins Ernie Banks and Alex Rodriguez as the only shortstops to hit 30 home runs in at least five seasons. An eighth 200 strikeout season for Chris Sale. Braves, they shut out the Rockies 3-0. The Bravos now lead the Mets by a half game for the final wildcard spot in the NL. Kyle Schwarber, he hit 3 home runs in a Phillies win over the Blue Jays 10-9. Guardians beat the Royals 7-1. Rays beat the Twins 2-1. So Cleveland's division lead over Minnesota is now 4.5 games. Kansas City is 5.5 back. The Nats beat the Marlins 6-2. Keibert Ruiz finished a triple shy of the cycle. Paul Skeen strikes out 6 Cubs as the Pirates get a 5-0 shutout win at Wrigley. Cardinals beat the Brewers 7-4 in 12 innings. Michael Ciani with the winner. Seth Brown's walk-off single pushes the A's over the Mariners 3-2. NFL, the Jets and nickel corner Michael Carter II have agreed to a 3-year extension worth nearly $31 million. College football, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Alabama, and Notre Dame are this week's AP Top 5. I'm Manny Rodriguez.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Infinity Sports Network. That's Infinity Sports Network to follow us on Instagram.
McCaffrey runs around. Purdy pressures. Purdy throws. Caught by Brandon Ayuk. Touchdown! San Francisco Ayuk.
Ayuk is on fire!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It was a busy day for the San Francisco 49ers Tuesday. Not only did Brandon Ayuk speak for the first time following his contract extension, and he actually admitted that he made this more difficult on the Niners than it needed to be. He said that he dragged it out a little bit, but he was asked about whether or not staying in San Francisco was part of the ultimate resolution.
Yeah, it's easy to say that now. Ultimately, yeah. I wanted to be in this position right here that I'm in right now, standing here, talking to y'all. But like I said, every day was different. It's negotiation. Every day is different. And just following my heart and myself in each day, and that led to here today.
So he gets his deal, 4 years, $120 million, so $30 million each year. Trent Williams restructures his contract. He said he never intended for it to take this long, but he actually understood the perspective of the Niners. He's 36 years old. Understanding a contract that goes through 38 would be tough to fully guarantee. So they were able to come to terms finally. And also says that at this point, he doesn't anticipate there being any lingering hard feelings or bad blood. I like the way he handled his business. But I think the probably the comments that attracted the most attention. So those that were most high profile coming from the Niners on Tuesday had to do with Ricky Pearsall and the fact that this was John Lynch sharing his emotions and sharing his perspective on the day he heard about Ricky. So going back to Saturday when he got the call,
it was very sobering. You never love to get any call with regards to your players where they're in danger or peril. And man, the earliest calls that I received were extremely scary. Hey, you know, we believe Ricky's been shot in the chest, and that outcome's not usually a good one. So that was a tough Saturday. It was a tough ride down to San Francisco General. And just so grateful that everything worked out the way it did.
Throughout the course of John's comments, you can hear him kind of tapping, nervous, anxious type of tapping on the podium. It doesn't work here.
Just so grateful that everything worked out the way it did.
Yeah, you can hear him there as he's talking about the phone call on Saturday. It doesn't work when I do it because we have a really large desk. It's a circular desk. But what most of these guys are standing behind is a podium. So narrow. Maybe it's got two shelves behind it, but because it's not a solid piece of furniture, it's movable, it's mobile. They bring it in and out of the press room. It's not, in other words, fastened to the ground in most cases or a permanent fixture. for that reason, and because there's likely nothing underneath except for a couple of shelves, it has this resonating quality where when he pounds on it, the microphone picks that up and you can hear the reverberations. It happens a lot. Nick Saban used to do it all the time too. But it seemed really clear that this was part of kind of his anxiety as he was talking about Ricky Pearsall and just hearing that news and even having to answer the question as a football general manager of whether or not the bullet did any damage to his top draft pick and a future wide receiver for the Niners.
No, it didn't. It was through and through and through is kind of how they describe it. And, you know, like I said, multiple people down there said this is about as good as outcome as you could have in this situation.
Yeah, this is not something that John Lynch ever expected to be talking about. And he's been through pretty much everything. And it's been, what, almost a decade that he and Kyle Shanahan have been, not quite, but almost, that he and Shanahan have been with the Niners. I mean, they've pulled off draft day deals. They've had to deal with holdouts and hold-ins. They've had, I don't know how many, 17 different quarterbacks, it feels like, over the course of these years. They've made all kinds of tough personnel decisions. They've dealt with painful losses in Super Bowls and other big games. But clearly this is not something that you're ever prepared to talk about as a general manager. And there are obviously the positives and the miracle that comes out of this where the bullet does no damage. It goes right through him and he is expected to play at some point this year, though they don't know how long. But John also said that, you know, the Niners were able to rally around Ricky. And kind of interesting, too, John went to the hospital while the rest of the team was together in one place.
At the time of all this going on, we had a team party that was scheduled. When I got to the hospital and visited with Ricky, it was one of the first things he said, Mr. Lynch, what's going on? I would really like everyone to go to that party. And I'd also like to talk to some of my teammates. I said, Ricky, you take care of yourself. But you know, kind of a cool moment. We were able to pipe Ricky into the party, and he FaceTimed the entire group.
I do look forward to the day we hear from Ricky. They had to fill his roster spot. They had to make that decision pretty quickly. And something that John said that resonated with me is that we're not just talking about a physical recovery. We're talking about emotional and mental and when he's ready. And I just didn't really think about that part because it's so astounding that a bullet went through him and didn't cause any major damage. And he was out of the hospital in 24 hours. Really didn't think about what he might be feeling in terms of post-traumatic stress or anything like that. So, yeah, I'm glad he has all the support of the Niners, to be sure. All right, we'll do a lot more football. I know we didn't even get to everything that I wanted to. We'll do a lot more football as we march our way toward Thursday night kickoff between the Ravens and the Chiefs. Again, don't miss that conversation with Charles Davis from our podcast. But a couple of things I need you to know that are super cool. First of all, Francis Tiafoe and Taylor Fritz, two American tennis players, into the semifinals at the U.S. Open. They face each other, which is kind of bad news in one respect, but also great news in that at least one of them will advance to the U.S. Open final. It'll be the first time in nearly two decades that an American man has reached the U.S. Open final in New York. And how about this? Not since, are you ready? Do you remember? Andy Roddick in 2003 has an American won on the men's side. And so this is huge. This could be history, but it's just great to see two Americans still standing in the Final Four. So that's awesome. Looking forward to those semifinals, which come up on, I think, Thursday, Friday. I'll have to make sure I look. But yeah, it's going to be a showdown in New York between two Americans, which is awesome. Something else that happened late last night. So those of you who are just waking up this morning or headed to work, you might not know. Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever are playoff bound. For the first time since 2016, this franchise will be part of the WNBA postseason. And this is not only great news for the league because she is a cash cow right now. Fans are going to be wanting to buy their tickets as soon as they're available. I bet they'll sell out as quickly as a Taylor Swift concert. But it's awesome for the team itself, too. They had They had not made the playoffs since 2016. They were sitting on what was the longest postseason drought, tied for the longest postseason drought in league history, actually. And because of a couple of results late last night, they were able to clinch even before they get on the court and play again today. So that's huge after where they started 3-10. So congratulations to the Fever. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!